It's with great pleasure that I welcome Gary Turner onto this podcast, and particularly the theme of vital journeys, things that happen to us along the way that we can either get angry at and run from or step into and become more through them. Gary's probably the best person I know we could talk to about how to do that with grace, style, with enormous curiosity and heart. Gary, welcome. Let's discover your journey, if we may, and ask some hard questions that only the bold and brave can answer.
Oh, we are setting this up for an interesting exploration, Donna. So yeah, I'm game.
All right. What it takes to use these events. The first one is always a catalyst. What happens in life that disrupts everything, throws everything up in the air, and pulls out some stuff that's been repressed for a long time? What's that event for you? And then how did you explore it? How did you work with it? Kindly walk us through that.
No, sure. I'll weave two things together for now, Donna, if that's okay. So first thing was, I was bullied as a kid, age 12, 13, repeatedly by a gang of boys, beaten to the ground, kicked in the head, really oppressed by a group of boys all throughout my 12 and 13 year old years. And lacking the emotional maturity, lacking the inner connection, I just went, oh my God, what do I do with this? My home life was lovely, but emotion wasn't discussed. Feelings weren't discussed at home. So I held on to that trauma, in essence, for over 25 years. So that was really the first catalytic. I can talk about it now, but I didn't see quite how formative that experience was until the other part I'll mention just quickly in the intro was 9 years ago. I sat in my apartment going, great, got the salary, got the house, got the car, having lovely holidays, got a fantastic family. Why the heck do I feel so empty and hollow on the inside? What is that feeling? Where does that come from? So I'll just put those two little hooks out for now, but they're two pretty pivotal moments of my journey to date, Donna.
Right. There's a catalyst that begs you to explore what got shoved down. What was yours?
It's so interesting because I'd love to be able to say to you it was this specific moment, but it actually was that realization. If for some reason in that moment, I guess the answer to your question, Donna, and I've never thought about this till this moment, there was a start of a connection fusing between my head and my heart and gut. Something happened in that moment that went, hang on, this is not just a logical response you're looking for, Gary, to how you're feeling inside. Something else is going on. For some reason, that catalyzed curiosity and not a midlife crisis.
And that's perfect, because midlife crises are all about not paying attention to those signals and walking away from them and just acting on impulse. What have you learned from this experience? If we do a retrospective on the journey, what was the biggest moment for how to move forward, just what to do with all this turmoil inside? And at the same time, there's a nice blend of clarity that's showing up.
So I guess what's hopefully most helpful for your audience, Donna, is with that curiosity came, how do I try and feel differently? How do I try and be differently in my world, regardless of the job I'm doing, regardless of where I'm living, regardless of the size of my salary or my mortgage, right? So there was this real deep curiosity around, what more can I learn? What am I missing? What have I missed out over the years because of me holding on to this trauma, this tension, this fear, et cetera, et cetera? That was almost like the next level of catalyst was me just getting really curious and going into learning and development, organizational design, looking at all the people and culture stuff, all whilst running a 20 million business in my corporate employer. Why I'm framing that? It's very easy when we have these conversations to look at the outside world and go, okay, what happened then on the inside? Almost like as a reaction. But this was completely the opposite, right? Is in my inner world going, hang on, you've been asleep for 35 years, mate. Do you realize what is possible within you that will lead to a massive expansiveness outside of you? And that's what was going on at that point. There's this real head, heart, gut starting to fuse in that at that time.
That's a fascinating epiphany. I loved how you arrived at that journey. Now, how did that change how you viewed the outside world? Because that's a real shift from your inner security coming from the outside and having all the stuff, the tick boxes and everything else. How did that shift how you perceive things then? Because all of a sudden you've got this new awareness that you didn't have before. What changed?
What changed? It was pretty scary, right? Because we're conditioned under the current systems to play small, sit in the box, do as we're told. Yeah, all the stuff that you speak about in terms of the alternatives to that worldview. And it's pretty scary because I'm like, actually, I'm so much more than I've been conditioned to believe I am. There's so much more possibility open to me beyond the education I had and the jobs I've had today, et cetera, et cetera. My first and foremost thing was, wow, this is exciting, but actually quite scary, Donna, because you're going from 0.5x version of yourself to a genuine 100x version of yourself from the inside out almost overnight and not really knowing what to do with it all. So it's really a balance of checking that fear, but also staying curious and grounded and trying to keep that ego in check. All of that stuff was happening at the same time, really.
Yeah, messy.
Messy, yes.
Messy, but encouraging at the same time, because I can't help but think, and in my own experience at least, that when you start releasing all that repressed stuff and you start looking at it and saying, what can this teach me? How can I learn from this? There's a real surge of energy, because instead of all your energy devoted to hanging on to that repressed emotion and keeping it nice and safe and tucked away so nobody has to look at it, you release it and you go, oh my gosh, here's a superpower charge all of a sudden. Did that happen to you?
100%. I've literally got energetic reaction in the back of my neck as you share that, Donna, because I can't emphasize this point enough for you and your listeners. The expansiveness, the freedom that comes from letting go of all of that repression, you can't put it into words. It is not explainable, truly. It's something you have to feel. And it's huge. It's so huge.
Did it change how you do your work? How did it change your relationships when you all of a sudden released all of this?
It's a really good question, Donna. Bit of extra context. I've been in the same corporate job since 2009 as we're recording this. So I'm still selling chemicals. I'm still in one of the most extractive industries on the planet. And I've gone through this huge inner transformation over that period, certainly the last 10 years. So how that shifted for me is it's actually, this hadn't always been the case, but I'd say the last 3 years, Donna, it's gone from being work that I do to literally being a playground. Like, okay, if I say this that way, how are they going to react? Oh, actually, if I go and reduce the amount of hours I work to almost nothing, will they still pay me? If I go over and do this thing over here, what will happen? So it just becomes this continuous experimentation lab of human experience. And that's where I've been the last 3 years. Humility. I say it with absolute vulnerability. It's very messy. It's not always fun. But that's the curiosity and the playfulness. You know what I mean by playfulness. It's really intentional play. Like playing with the system, playing with your own patterns of behavior, playing with your own belief systems. And that's really been fascinating the last 3 years in particular, really.
Essentially, it feels like you're playing with possibilities. It's what if I do this? What happens? What if I do that? What happens? What's the response of my outer world to this particular approach or that particular approach? That's how I would define play in that environment.
My God, again, I've just had another reaction in the back of my neck as you said that, literally, because it's a beautiful way of framing it. Absolutely. How does the outside world react to me being more playful from the inside? I've never quite been so succinct as you just described it. Beautiful. Absolutely, that's the case.
I'm a process nerd. You know that. Everything, if you watch it, everything has to be, whatever's going on, there's a word we can put to it, like expression or reflection or retrospection or all of those things. What did you find supported you the most in moving through the journey from releasing all of that stuck stuff to feeling very liberated and exceptionally curious and quite stable emotionally? Stable, but in a dynamic way.
Yeah. I think there's two things I'd point at. One is don't do it on your own. That's the number one thing. Leaving this conditioned, I have to fend for myself. Be afraid, stay small, you've got to work this out yourself, don't ask for help. That'd be seen as being invulnerable. That'd be the negative side of vulnerability. Now, get someone in your corner would be my first thing. And I did that, my first coach in 2018. And I've never stopped having coaches or guides of some description right up until this day for the last 5 years. So that was absolutely point number one, I would say. Don't do it on your own, Donna. I could go to a million other points, but I'll leave you with that one for now.
No, that's good. I did do it on my own, but that's my style. It's just my way. But I got epiphanies. I got insights from so many people. Tell me how it changed conforming versus non-conforming, because one of the things that happens, I observed again in society and as a professional facilitator, is that people will conform to get approval. But when security comes from within, there's less need for that kind of endorsement. You're more able to rely on your own thinking and your own intuitions and act on them as well, not just, oh, that's nice, and then park it. You're able to take it and move forward with it, as you have with things like colonialism, like topics that people would normally run away from because it's like, oh, it might threaten my belief system. But you wade right in and chat about it openly and honestly. So talk about that.
Yeah, I think this has certainly been the last 3 years for me, Donna. I guess the best way I could describe it is there's almost like an inverse thing in my experience, which is you go from like fear, super low vibration, bottom of a spiral, right? And it's very difficult to get up into higher energy states, more possibility when you're stuck in that low fear state energy. And it's almost like an inverse of that, right? Is that there's just this, when we realize that we are more than our job, when we realize we are more than our salary, when we do play as we've been describing already, it allows us, I do this a lot more now, it allows us to actually start to go, what do I want to do in this moment? Not what am I being paid to do, not what am I being told to do, what do I want to do in this moment that A, serves me and serves what I believe in? And that is the place I come from a heck of a lot more now, to the point where, like I say, I'm still in the same job. And I could say something which might sound really shocking to people, but I'm doing the highest value, lowest volume work I've ever done in my life, and I'm still getting paid for it. That doesn't mean I'm being lazy. It doesn't mean I don't care. What I'm saying is I do not allow people to put their fears onto me and therefore lose my energy reacting to their fears. I'm very acutely aware now when people are asking me to do something or they think they're delegating, I know very quickly, intuitively, what is healthy for me and for them. All of this stuff's going on as well at the same time, Donna.
So you can make really clear choices grounded in, stay completely aligned with your sense of who you are and of your purpose. You're not going to be pulled around and yanked in multiple directions without choosing to do so.
Exactly. While still honoring there's a job to be done, I'm in a corporate space, but I know my value. This is also a really important point. Coming from that higher energy state, that knowing state from the inside out, I'm not seeking anyone's validation. All I need to know is, does this make sense in the moment?
It's a shorter decision point because it steps into awareness first, and then it's clear. The path is clear ahead. Yeah. Wonderful. Now, how has that changed how work has responded to you? And what have you been doing with all of this beautiful energy and the bold conversations you've been having and the creative exercises, you know, the podcasts you've been running? I mean, you've interviewed me before, kindly, and it's been wonderful because, you know, as someone who's felt like I haven't had a voice, I've been in a closet, all of a sudden I get to talk. It's just like, it's a beautiful experience. How has it changed what you've noticed going on in work? Because as you well know, there's a lot of repression there.
Yeah. First thing first, episode 45 of Value Through Vulnerability podcast. Go and listen to Donna a few years ago, but it's always great to listen back, right? Again, part of that journey. To answer your question, Donna, it's still unfolding. Right. And what I mean by it's still unfolding is back to this playfulness. In most other places, I honor my privilege as well as part of this answer because of who I am and what I look like and the unearned power that I have. Again, awareness. I'm able to say and poke things that most other people wouldn't dream of poking or playing with in a corporate setting. For example, bringing up the topic of the Gaza conflict within my work organization. Everyone is running a million miles from that. There's no right or wrong answer at this point, but I'm just saying, that's where I'm at now. I think we need to be talking about this, bearing in mind how interconnected everything is. I'm talking about diversity, inclusion, and justice and saying, are we just being a performative organization? Or do we genuinely believe in anti-racism and truly trying to develop more social cohesion? And I'm talking about my company and as a sector within chemicals. So these are the types of dialogue that I am actively igniting and trying to walk into, which I would not have dreamed of 5 years ago, Donna, me even being able to have the words to engage with. So that's just a really strong, bold example, just to bring that to life for you.
And I think it's also a real illustration of leadership talent that you would not have seen had you stayed in the repressed zone. You're leading these conversations. They're not coming to you and you're not fighting through them or at them. You're stepping right into them. And I don't think you can do that unless you've liberated that stuck stuff and worked with it more intentionally as you have. I think it's a whole different level of leadership. How does that contrast with the traditional type of leadership that you work with day to day?
So I won't name any names in terms of companies or anything like that, but I would say that a lot of the extractive industries, whether you're looking at mining, chemicals, pharmaceuticals, the supply chain that wraps it, which is very much where I spend a lot of my time, Donna, the de facto state is still that old school command and control. We all talk about it. People in HR talk about it. but they're not going where you go enough, Donna, which is to the emotional health part. That is not a conversation in my organization. It's not a conversation in the sector. And that is the single biggest miss that I see. Everything's still above the neck. So what's the logic? What's the STEM? What's the science? Yeah, great. But then I ask the question, whose science? Whose logic are we actually centering here? So it's these sorts of curiosity that come back to that playground again. It's frustrating, Donna, for both of us. You've been on this a lot longer than me. But even for me, the last 5 or 6 years, I see the possibility in these people that they will not allow themselves to see in themselves. That's the opportunity, but also the frustration in this moment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's so many layers to that. Part of it also, I think, is permission. Whether you've gone through something that's been really hard or harsh, and you transcend that by moving through it, you reach a different level of being, of seeing, of perceiving the world. Part of it is that, and part of it is being afraid of that. What if I open this can of worms? I'm seeing a lot of that right now because I'm starting to push things out. As you mentioned it earlier, starting to put things out, and people run in the opposite direction. Nobody that's in my circle, but certainly people that are really making assumptions about what this work means, afraid of what might show up. In the leadership zone, one of the things I find interesting now, watching this arc between leaders as positions of authority and centralized decision-making over to leaders as leaders in the self and self-organization or self-management, you've got to lead yourself. If you can't lead yourself through your life, then somebody else will do it for you. That's the work that we're facing right now. When you see traditional management, these folks are under a huge amount of pressure. Mm-hmm. What do you think it'll take for them to be able to evolve into something more fulfilling? The logic of gain is there, but there's also the psychology of loss.
Yeah. I think the two sides that I witness inside corporate, right across the sectors I'm talking to, is a sense of loss of power, for sure, and privilege. It's unspoken, but for sure that is a fear. And that's why there's such a clampdown on DEI, and there isn't the investment in justice work as there really should be in corporate spaces, because people fear loss of power, loss of privilege. But that's grounded in fear. We all know that, right? At the end of the day. So how do we get people to move away from that? I believe it's community. Community that is cross-sectional, cross-functional, intersectional. I have a dream. I'm not co-opting anybody else's phrase, but I literally do have a dream, Donna. Like, why do we not have networks where you have IT companies working with pharmaceutical companies, working with big oil companies, working with indigenous tribes? Okay, you wouldn't do that because they'd be harmed. You get my point. If we center the people with the knowledge, with the innovation, those that aren't wrapped up in Western hegemony and colonized thinking, we can literally shift things at a rate that we wouldn't believe is possible. Like, we're talking days and weeks, not years and decades. But that takes back to one of our themes, vulnerability. To let go of having to have all the answers. To let go of it being all about you as a senior leader or an executive of a company. That letting go has to be an embodied response from within the body. But how do we invite the spaces like you offer? Like some offer, we need spaces for these leaders that they can come in, take those work masks off, take the work pressures off, all that conditioning, and go, what does it actually feel like to be human for a day or two here? And what would it look like to make possible futures that decentered us in the West and centered those most harm for all of our benefits in the long term? All of that is waiting to be accessed, but it's going to take vulnerability. Vulnerability is a critical gateway. I'm 100% sure of it. Donna.
Yeah, I agree. Have you found yourself reframing the meaning of vulnerability through this journey? Because many people associate vulnerability with weakness, particularly in environments where there's a firm belief that we're just our heads, just floating heads. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. I think for me, it's that shift. I'm literally looking out as I reflect on this, Donna, with a beautiful blue sky where I am just outside London at the moment. There's this freedom. We need leaders to understand that there is a freedom on the other side of vulnerability. There isn't the pain that you think there's going to be. For sure, you're opening yourself up in a way that we've been conditioned is unsafe. For sure, I get it. That's the conditioning again. But I want your listeners to understand firsthand from someone that's gone through it and continues to go through it. There is freedom on the other side of vulnerability that you cannot even start to appreciate until you start the journey.
I so appreciate that, because it is one of the most difficult things to do, to step from a place of familiarity. I've got all the things that the tick box society's list. I've got the yard, whatever's on your list, to step through a portal of repressed emotions or emotional fogginess, whatever you want to call it, to something that feels very unknown and feels unclear and uncertain. So the idea of freedom at the other end of the experience, not just the feeling, but the immersion of freedom into every cell in the body, I think is very alluring. It gives you a destination. You go, okay, I get that. I can head there.
Yeah. And thank you for framing it that way as well, because I think it should be alluring, like to let go of that weight of having to believe you are the only one, or that you do need all the answers. Like, that's a totally conditioned state, right? That is not healthy. That is not coming from this emotional health space that you so beautifully teach. I get so impassioned about this topic because it's easy to go freedom, yeah, William Wallace or whatever in Scotland. We're talking about an inside-out feeling that you have probably never ever experienced. So you can't put words to it. It is an expression.
When you look at your business, the way I see it anyway, or the way I've experienced it and observed it, is that you do your self work, and then you work on a team, and it changes how you work on a team, and then you work within the team, and it changes how the organization works. Have you been able to unleash this freedom internally in your company and see people respond differently? Have you been able to introduce vulnerability into those work environments that don't value vulnerability? They just value the walking heads approach.
So yes, 100%. So I've got some real tangible examples. I can give you one, which was actually between 2015 and 2018, when I was at that launch point of my own journey. And the great thing about the employer that I still work for today is that they're very entrepreneurial. So everything I was learning, if I may name check a mutual friend of ours at World Blue as well, at Tracy Fenton, at that time, I was going through some of their freedom-centered leadership work, and I was able to actually apply in real time what I was learning with them. So I was running experiments based on what I was learning and literally applying it in real time within my team. And we ended up adding 6 million euros in sales and 1.5 million euros in margin over that three-year period. Nothing else changed. Same colleagues, same organization, same business model, similar market dynamics. This stuff isn't perfect correlation, but it's very clearly linked to how we reorganized the team, moved to more self-managed structure, left desk by PowerPoint. I could go on about what we changed, but all of it was around how do we take power, or important point, how do we each, team of 15 of us, stop giving our power away to this one person who actually doesn't want that much responsibility? How do we work with that one person that wants to be with the rest of us and co-create and self-organize and reimagine together our team dynamic? And the result was increase of 6 million sales and 1.5 million euros, just as one experiment. Now, that's a great example. The challenge with the bigger machine, the bigger system, is that it's very hierarchical, and they will do everything they can at the top to stamp it out, because we're back into that fear-based cycle of, who am I without my job? If I'm not an executive, who am I? You can start to see how this layers, but I just really believe, Donna, and there's more of us that are doing this, the more we run the experiments, the more we work with people like you from the outside in with these experiments, it can set off a catalytic impact across industry. I'm absolutely convinced of that.
No, I completely agree. Either Donella Meadows or Dana Zohar have done the math on the small group that can change the whole state of mind or consciousness, if you will, of a larger group. You need a critical mass, but you don't need everybody. You need a percentage of people out of that larger group to lead the way, lead it through their energy, through their spark. Yeah.
If I may share one other thing, it's really relevant to this point. Version of Gary 2009, nice guy, cared, come into this organization. Gary today, on the 12th of February, as we're recording this, 2024, not only am I running a multi-billion dollar business for my employer, not only am I still being paid to do that, I'm also running learning and development for the 1 billion turnover business unit that I'm part of. People are listening to me now around topics that I was introducing them to 8 to 10 years ago. There is this fear-based lag that we see in a lot of big corporates and probably SME-type businesses. But I think the network effect, again, the stuff you talk about, Donna, the more we can cross-fertilize knowledge across sector, across function, then we can really accelerate system change. I truly believe that.
And we know it. We've got case studies where the networked effect has been put into play awareness is one thing. The conceptual or the cognitive insight is another, but making things happen is always networks, interaction that just spreads. As we both know, there'll be an acceleration and then there'll be this pause. It happens when you fitness train and then you reach a plateau and you cruise along. I want to get out of this plateau, but it's a rest. And then you can take it to the next level. In viral change, Dr. Leandro Herrero said elsewhere on the podcast, it's something that engages this deep aspect of who we are and brings it forward. It's relational. It's not transactional. We moved away from transactional. We haven't in traditional organizations, but we certainly have when you look at companies that are seeking and people that are seeking to adapt to what's going on around them. There's another question I want to ask you, and that's about stress. What did you do with stress and how did you experience that? Was that an issue for you? Was it something that you dealt with, or was it just part of the process of moving through, or something else?
Yeah, I'm lucky that I don't feel I've had too many sort of stress moments per se, but I did have a moment back in 20. Whilst it's actually a good point, this is a good element of vulnerability. So despite doing the work, unlearning a lot of the conditioning, opening up more and more through vulnerability, I still had my issues, right? I did have quite a toxic relationship with the boss back in 2018. I got so in my head about it, Donna. I ended up basically driving one way down the motorway in the UK and taking 3 days off work. I was so overwhelmed by how I didn't feel seen. I didn't feel like I was being valued. I felt like I was being just basically completely ignored. So that is probably a real life example of what I would call self-imposed stress. No one had actually said anything overtly to me, but the stories I was telling myself from inside out layered up that I went bang. That's probably one of the most memorable examples of self-imposed stress that I had back in 2018. And how I dealt with it was basically to give myself 3 days to allow my mind to settle, pretty much.
Yeah, good call. Do you notice in the moment, because there's that lovely intersection between the catalyst or trigger and then deciding what to do about it. Did you notice that synapse is shortened just by way of giving people signals, the audience signals for how to work with what's going on in their world? What could you share there that helped you a lot as you moved along?
Yeah, what helps me then and continues to help me now because I'm practicing it as a muscle is one, breathing. Remembering to do some deep breaths, point number one. And point number two is that length has definitely shortened. What I would say today, Donna, and this is going to sound spiritual because it is, particularly the last 2 years, I feel like I'm an observer of life. It's almost out of body most of the time. When things in the moment are happening like that, I feel like I zoom straight back up and I'm looking back at myself going, right, in this moment, what do you want to do? How do you want to react? There's almost this dialogue that happens in the moment really quickly. And then intuitively, I make a decision based on that. But it's a really interesting, and it could probably sound absolutely wacky to many people, but it's almost like I'm observing my life as much as living it these days. I think that's an invitation for people to get curious. How do you find your way if you're listening to this? What are the ways that you can try and observe the situation more in the moment rather than get drawn into the situation in the moment is what I would offer.
No, that's brilliant because when I trained facilitators for 11 years in large organizations, that's one of the skills you use to be able to interact with people here, but also just park yourself above and say, what's going on here before or after? Preferably, you've got it down in the moment. But sometimes that awareness of what happened 2 or 3 days later, and you go, oh, nuts. Now I can see what happened. It's a little late, but still, it offers insight because the cues you pick up in the moment allow you to respond more quickly. That's one of the primary skills to be able to do that. Zooming out now, I call it, but it turns out that's been used for a lot of different things. Stepping back, self-witness, the compassionate self-witness, being able to see yourself, do something in the moment and not judge yourself harshly, but hold the space for everyone in it to hold compassion toward everyone. Everyone is trying to do their best and they're being affected by what's going on around them and they're not aware of it. Most often, when you go to work, you're in a context that's familiar, what you're dealing with. When you go into a new environment, a new business environment, immediately, especially with someone who's done the work you've done, the emotional work, you're able to read what this environment's all about. What's the context I'm dealing with? So that's leading me to another question, which is contextual awareness. It's one of the lowest skills we have in the executive level, or if it were to be tested, it would be across the board. is to recognize that what's going on around us at the planetary level, there's big stuff happening, and how we react or how we respond to it determines what happens next. Contextual awareness that goes through workplaces, my home life, where am I living? I've noticed it for when I was on the road for that long period of time, house to house. In one house, I'd want to run and jog, and in the other house, I just wanted to curl up, drink hot chocolate. There's an effect that these spaces have on us, and also the events in the world have on us. Have you found you've been able to do more of that, pulling out, seeing, and working with the contextual of the situation you're in?
It's such a beautiful framed question, Donna. Yes is the short, simple answer. I'll give a bit more of a framing to that for your listeners. So I work in the middle of the extractive industries within chemicals. You couldn't be more extractive. And whilst those chemicals go into everything that we wear, eat, touch, as of today, there's very little contextual awareness at the leadership level, because the conditioned awareness is grow, acquire, buy another company, keep this growth journey going at all costs, literally. All costs to anything apart from our own organization. That's the fear-based driver still of big business, particularly within the extractive industries. And what I'm finding myself doing these days, particularly as I continue my own work, I also have a decolonial guide as well. I'm zooming out real time, and I'm talking to you today about it, literally looking at it going, hang on. So I live in the UK. There's 50 countries having national elections across the world, the biggest election year probably in our recent history. My government is funding and selling arms to one particular country to try and basically commit whatever to another country. The industry that I work within sells raw materials that at some point in the supply chain could potentially end up in those same weapons. Yeah. You start to join all of these dots and zoom out and go, and that's not to blame. Yeah. It's not our fault. The systems have arrived where they've arrived. But the ability, when we let go of our fears and let go of our ego and let go of all of that conditioning, is we start to see the planetary world in all of its complexity and all of its interconnectedness in a much easier, graceful, curious way than I would have done in even a few years ago, where I would have gone, oh my God, the shame, the guilt for me to even think that I could be part of this interconnected web of oppression that's happening 3,000 miles away from me, for example. Coming from that place of grace and curiosity, and then being able to zoom out and zoom in, and also invite questions around that then, not with judgment, not to blame anyone, but just to say, hey, what could we do differently as an organization or as a sector? Now we can see how interconnected everything is. Why do we just want to grow? Don't we just actually want to divert some of that funds towards reimagining how leadership operates and maybe do a journey of decolonization for our leadership? Do you start to get more curious about what could be possible, even if it's macro systemic and planetary, right back to what's the conversation I'm having with my partner? That ability to zoom in, zoom out, but taking in that complexity all of the time in every dialogue is what becomes open to us, I believe, when we come from that emotional health space.
Yeah, beautiful. You're my inspiration on grace. I consider myself to be not very graceful. I'm more like the kid that walks along, trips over everything, and knows how to fall down and get back up again. But not gracefully either. You're definitely my inspiration for grace. And I love how you explain that, because it really, I think, offers a great deal of hope. In about 2011, when I had my other podcast, my first one, I interviewed Gavin Hollett, and I think Duncan Penn was on that interview. Gavin certainly had this idea that companies could take their marketing budget and instead of spending it on ads or whatever, but do something better with it, to maybe channel it into homelessness, to be a part of a solution instead of continuing to go, it's a problem. When he raised that, I thought, oh, that's brilliant, because that would tie meaning to purpose. I had another interview with Camp Edwards, who's local here, and he was doing something similar. He had his business, but he was doing something on the side, which was very socially conscious. And he had, in terms of people engaging and doing things, they were full on. It's like, whoa, how do you slow this down? You can't, because people care about something. They're moving forward. The power of that passion and the source of the emotion was just phenomenal. I think that's what we can hope for, and preferably activate or encourage or support or whatever the verb might be, that would support these companies in rethinking how they're moving through the world and what they want to leave as a legacy, something exploitative or something that restores vitality. And that's a mantra that I'm playing in just about everything I do, it seems. But that's where I think there's a huge amount of opportunity.
I couldn't agree more. And I love that you're using that restore vitality, because I think from a individual point of view, that is what I witness all around, a complete lack of aliveness, of vitality in the spirit. It's literally, I don't know why people worry about AI taking our jobs, because we're already robots. 98% of people that work in business roles are already robotic in how they're operating and embodied. So don't worry about AI, people. Worry more about getting into your body is my invitation.
Yeah. Remembering you're human and jump back in. Do you have anything in particular we could leave our listeners with on the journey itself? If you're in that spot where you're giving up your authority, your self-autonomy, what could be said that would help people rethink that?
I'm not just saying it to be kind, but look at some of your previous talks, your Agile People talks. Your previous podcast is genuinely a brilliant place to go, because I do still invite, again, work with someone else if you really need to do that. If you're able to do that, it's definitely a good place to go. But there's so many resources, your resources, my Value Through Vulnerability podcast. There's so many resources. My invitation is get curious. Believe that you can be exponentially more than you are today. I'm going to say that again. Believe that you can be exponentially more than you are today, because you can be. And it's latent and it's waiting to be expressed through you. The practice of letting go is probably what I would follow that on with, which is, so getting curious around what might be my stories. Why do I give my power away? What's the story I'm telling myself? Do I not believe I'm worthy? Do I believe that I'm nothing without this job? Do I believe that actually if I don't have the pay rise, I'm not worth? There's something around worthiness. And I would invite your listeners to get curious with love again and with care of yourself. In which areas of your life do you feel worthy right now? In which areas do you not feel worthy? And that might give some early stage signals as to where you might want to explore a bit more.
And I know you're holding space for people in these conversations too. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I think this is the funny thing, right? We've discussed this before, Donna, is there's so much space. Like people literally say to me, going, how do you do so much? And it's going to sound like a cliche. I'm not doing that much. I'm being a hell of a lot more and I'm doing some things. But the space that opens up again when you come from that place of freedom, post-vulnerability, is genuinely expansive. And that's what I do. So I work with maximum 10 people on a one-to-one basis. I take them on what I would say is a mix of two things. One is an emergent vulnerability journey, which is 60 minutes holding space and just exploring what's on someone's heart or mind in a safe space. Or I've got something I call a campfire experience, which is 5 very specific areas to look at, like vulnerability, self-awareness, systemic awareness, and also spotting behavioral patterns. That's a bit more structured for those that might go, actually, I want something to hang onto if I go through this sort of unlearning and learning journey. So there's a pure emergent lens and there's a sort of more structured lens. They're both going back to the same place, which is, how do we help you connect head, heart, gut in a way that gives you the freedom that you deserve, is pretty much the summary, really.
Beautiful. I love that yourself and the work I've been doing and other people have been doing. There's all of a sudden this feeling that we're all coming into the living room and chatting and going, what are you up to? Because it's such a convergence of heart's desire to see people be the best they can be, so that we see the restoration of vitality in living systems in the planet. We begin to care about biodiversity. We don't throw the banana out the window or the gum out the window. We're a very messy species. We soil everything, and it would be nice to see us pick up after ourselves and put the socks in the drawer and like keep the garbage off the road and all of those things. And also just, what do we do with how we handle our rubbish? That's a really simple, just put your garbage so it can go back into the system. Zero waste. Anything else you want to add?
I'm going to leave it with, if I may, just one final passing thought. And this is as positive as it is reality check. I heard something quite recently, which I thought was really beautiful and helps hopefully get us back in our body, which is, everybody that's listening, don't worry about the planet. The planet will be fine. She will sort herself out. Don't think for a second that we need to save her. She will be fine. Do we want to save ourselves on the planet by acting and being different with each other? That's a better question to be asking. Don't worry about saving the planet. She will be fine. That's what I would like to leave your listeners with.
Brilliant way to close. Gary, thank you so much for being on this program and sharing your experience. I think it moves everybody to a much higher level of possibility, lived experience. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Could the idea that vulnerability makes you weak
be used to control people and restrict them to operating within a set of limits that hardly reflects the capability sitting inside each individual, much less the collective intelligence of the group. Now, this may sound a bit cantankerous. However, it's a question that needs to be brought into conscious exploration so that we understand why this whole idea of vulnerability making you weak is the exact opposite of what it effectively does in leadership and for organizational emotional maturity. Brené Brown has spoken on the power of vulnerability. It got a huge number of views, and yet at some point when it enters into the business world, all of a sudden vulnerability becomes a weakness. Vulnerability is really the willingness to be changed and to let the walls down. It's a strength in business leaders because without it, you can't learn, lead, or do anything other than what you've already been doing. Lack of vulnerability creates an exceptionally threatening world in which those at the top defend their companies and themselves from risk, from information, and from meaningful relationships. In a business context, being vulnerable means embracing those underlying principles of openness, transparency, and a willingness to admit you know nothing, all of which enable you to be curious and receptive to new ideas. It's really bringing into the world a fresh mind, a fresh way of seeing things. Add a dose of compassion, and you then have access to your heart's intelligence, which is a real blend of cognition intellectually, but also sensory cognition as well. It enables you to see and receive information that's currently being ignored or beyond sight. In the years that I have spent wandering a couple of times around the world and then 9 years as digital nomad or whatever you want to call it, vulnerability to me is learning, staying open to learning, even when it's tempting to shut down openness because I might have been looking for certainty. Security is not found in outside security. It is found on the inside, that sense of adaptive capacity that requires vulnerability, requires you to pay attention and then walk straight into those openings for learning where you gain more insight, more shift in perspective, and reflective practice. I hope that those thoughts serve you well. I've written about this in Decision Making for Dummies, and I also republished that article not long ago. A couple of thoughts here that I hope will aid you in working with uncertainty as a real lever and an opportunity to become more adaptive, more capable by staying open to new information, examining problems from as many different perspectives as you can without engaging in one iota of defensiveness, by uncovering assumptions that are being made, what's being taken for granted, looking for feedback so you're not threatened by uncomfortable information, because that's what you need for sound decision making. You need uncomfortable information. You need information that questions your assumptions. You need information that explores things that you haven't thought of before. Another tip would be to approach each situation with a sense of curiosity and a complete lack of certainty, which means your mind is not made up. You're open to other possibilities. You can see things as potentialities and not probabilities. Lots of opportunity to explore through the lens of vulnerability, as my guest today, Gary Turner, so very clearly, very compassionately, and quite beautifully stated. For more information on Gary's work, see the show notes. I've been moving courses forward because I truly believe that this is the time for many people to lead from their own source and not rely on the structures that we built for older times when we need them for modern times. Please share this episode if you feel it helps or will help other people. I'd appreciate your support through the tips jar. Thank you for joining me today. You can follow me on LinkedIn or X or Instagram. Look forward to seeing you on the next show.